Good morning, everyone. This morning we are reading from Pastor Shiva, Lesson 54. What are our Saiva forehead marks? Our forehead marks are a distinctive Hindu cultural and spiritual practice. We wear red or black dots, white stripes, and designs in sandalwood paste. Most marks are sectarian. They tell the world which Hindu tradition we follow. Worshippers of Lord Vishnu often wear a U-shaped tilaka made of clay. Saivites wear three stripes of white sacred ash called vibhuti or tiruniru across their forehead. This mark is called a tripundra. These practices have mystical explanations. Holy ash can be seen by the devas in the inner worlds, especially during puja. This allows them to better help us. The holy ash signifies purity and the burning away of the soul's three bonds, anava, karma, and maya. Wearing it brings the blessings and protection of God Shiva. It also reminds us of the temporary nature of the physical body and inspires us to strive without delay for God Shiva's grace. A dot is often worn just below the middle of the forehead. It is called bindi in Hindi and pottu in Tamil and is used by Hindus of all sects. Said to represent the third eye of spiritual sight, it is a reminder to use our mind's eye or inner vision and not just see life with our physical eyes. A red bindi can indicate a woman is married. A black one, especially on a child, is intended for protection. The sacraments passed out after a puja in a Saivite temple include vibhuti, kumkum, and sandalwood. Both men and women apply all three. Women usually use a smaller amount of ash on the forehead than men. Visitors to a Hindu home are often blessed first at the doorway with a pottu. We proudly wear our forehead marks, knowing they distinguish us as devout Hindus. And we have Gurudeva's quote. We wear the pure white ash to alert the devas that we are members of this religion. This vibhuti is a sign, a way of saying we seek your help and we seek your blessings. And by seeing the ash, they can distinguish your face. The dot worn on the forehead is a sign that one is a Hindu. The dot has a mystical meaning. It represents the third eye of spiritual sight, which sees things the physical eyes cannot see. Vibhuti and anava karma and maya, what I thought I'd speak a little bit about next. Trying to purify ourselves from the influence of anava, karma, and maya as it affects us as an individual. Maya comes first, the world. So, of course, reminder that in some traditions, maya means illusion, but in Saiva Siddhanta, it just refers to the world. Normally, when we think of the world and purifying ourselves from its influence, of course, we think of attraction, being drawn to that which is in the world. Patanjali uses the word raga for attraction. It's human nature, shall we say, to be drawn to that which is in the world, because we see it as a source of pleasure, or we see it as a way of becoming happy, And Patanjali says, attraction is that which rests on pleasant experiences. Meaning, if something has been enjoyable in the past, then we're attracted to it in the present. Very simple idea. And there's nothing wrong with enjoying things of the world, but as I've pointed out in a number of talks, it is problematic if we think it's going to provide us happiness. It's fine to have ice cream, but to think if we have ice cream every day of our life, that's what will make us happy. That's where we are going too far. Fine to enjoy certain things of the world, but we need to look for our happiness on the inside, not in what we experience in the world. Well, that would be the normal way of talking about Maya. Now we'd move on to karma. But Patanjali points out there's another way in which we are attached to the world, and that's by what we don't like. Oh, that's aversion. Dvesha. Aversion is that which rests on sorrowful experiences. So that's like the unpleasant experiences we had in growing up, painful memories of relationships with family members, events that happened. That's an attachment to Maya. It's an attachment to the past, but it's still an attachment. It externalizes us. So there's two ways we're attached to the world, through that which gives us pleasure and that which gives us pain or aversion. So we need to, of course, resolve that which gives us pain, and we have techniques for that, such as the Vasana Da Tantra, writing down what's bothering us about the past and burning it up. Apologizing to people, etc. Different ways we can resolve that which we don't like about the world. Well, once our attraction and aversion to the world is under control, shall we say, that's the first task. Because if it's not under control, that's constantly all we can do is handle attraction and aversion to the world. We're too busy doing that to do anything else. We can think about karma. So when we think about karma, and we understand the principle, and we have Maya reasonably under control, then, of course, the first way we think about it is not doing something adharmic. We don't want to do something that's not virtuous in the present because we know that's going to create the same experience for us in the future. So we have that understanding. So we start acting wisely in the present, and in that way we're slowly changing our karma over a period of many lifetimes by wise action in the present. And the biggest challenge in doing that comes when we get mistreated. We can be doing fine up to that point in the day. Then somebody's really nasty to us. And boy, we want to be nasty back, right? Human nature is to retaliate. So if we retaliate, of course, we've messed up our perfect record there for the day of dharmic action. So usually people don't retaliate who are religious, but they don't let go of it either. They kind of attach to it in a negative way again. They've created a new negative attachment there by resenting how they were treated, thinking about it. So if we think about something regularly, that means we're attached to it. And we created a new attachment to the world by not letting it go. So we need to find a way to let it go. And whatever works for you. You know, one way is philosophical. If you can be philosophical about it, you can say, well, this happened to me, this person did this, but I'm the one who created it. If this person hadn't done it to me, someone else would have to do it to me. Why should I get mad at the messenger? I created this event. The person just delivered my message. That's one way of looking at it, philosophical way. I remember one of our members was so good at that. she would thank the person. Oh, thank you for bringing my karma back to me. Expert in not creating new karma. So if we can handle mistreatment, let it go, then and act without doing anything adharmically, then we have karma under control. Our karma is getting more and more refined over lifetimes. Oh, well, what's left? A hard one. Maya and karma are easy. Anava is the hard one. So I'll read what Gurudeva says. Living with Shiva, chapter 8, Scriptural Study and Cognition, if you want to look it up. Psychic abilities are not in themselves deterrents on the path. They are permitted to develop later, after Parashiva, Nirvikalpa Samadhi. Okay, so those who have had Parashiva, it's okay. Those of you present today, all of you, you can develop those psychic abilities. The idea is they come naturally at a certain point in time. You're not going after them. After Parashiva, Nirvikalpa Samadhi has been attained and fully established within the individual. But this too would be under the Guru's grace and guidance, for these abilities are looked at as tools to fulfill certain works assigned by the Guru to the devotee to fulfill until the end of the life of the physical body. Oh, that's a nice way of looking at it. It's a tool that you can use on works assigned by the Guru. Very specific. It is the personal ego, the anava, that is developed through the practice of palmistry, astrology, tarot cards, fortune telling, past life reading, crystal gazing, crystal healing, prana transference, etc., etc., etc. This personal ego enhancement is a gift from those who are healed. He's being facetious. This personal ego enhancement is a gift from those who are healed. You don't want this gift, in other words. They're enhancing your ego. They're making it stronger. We want to make it weaker. You know. So if you heal people, then they praise you, and that can make your ego stronger. This personal ego enhancement is a gift from those who are healed, who are helped, who are encouraged, and who are in awe of the psychic power awakened in the heart chakra of this most perfect person of higher consciousness who doesn't anger, display fear, or exhibit any lower qualities. Oh, that's beautiful. In other words, I'll give an example. In monastic life, we have the vow of humility. We're supposed to work on lessening the ego sense. So when we come into the monastery, we have an ego sense, a worldly ego sense. I'm great at this, this, and this. You know, I come from this family, etc. We have an ego sense that we need to overcome. And monastic life has you cooking, sweeping floors, cleaning toilets, doing very simple things. And one of the reasons all of us do simple things is to lessen the ego sense. We don't have servants. We do it all ourselves. So let's say you're fairly successful at that. Gurudeva points on the ego doesn't totally go away until you, the time of Mahasamadhi. Let's say, so all we can say is you lessen the ego sense. And then you go out traveling and you get into a monastic situation like the healing situation. You're teaching and those you're teaching come up to you and say, "Oh, Swami, you're the best teacher that's ever come from the Adinam. You're really great." A whole lot of people tell you that. You come back to the Adinam with what? Now you have a spiritual ego. You got rid of your worldly ego, and now you've built up a spiritual ego. Who has given it to you? As it says here, the personal ego enhancement is a gift from those you taught. So, of course, as a monk, you don't want to build up a spiritual ego. And the same thing in ordinary life, once you get good at something and people start to recognize you as being good, you don't want to strengthen your ego because of that. Wonderful way not to strengthen the ego is to deflect praise. Someone says, oh, you're really great at this. I've never seen anyone do it so well. And then you say, well, that's because of my teacher, so-and-so. Or something more of a spiritual nature. Well, that's because I've been studying with Gurudeva for so long. He taught us how to do all these things. Someone praises you, you deflect the praise to a teacher. It's a very nice way of not just taking it on and strengthening the ego. The three malas that bind us are Maya, the ever-perpetuating dance of creation, preservation, and delusion. Karma, specifically our prarabdha karma, brought with us to face in this life, along with the karmas we are creating now and will create in the future. And anava, the ego, ignorance or sense of separateness. Maya can be understood, seen through, and adjusted to through the heart chakra powers of cognition, contentment, and compassion. So that's saying the same thing I did, but differently. Gurudeva is saying, using the word contentment for not looking for happiness outside yourself. Saying, if we're inside ourselves, in our higher chakras, the fourth chakra, heart chakra, we will experience cognition, contentment, and compassion. And therefore, that keeps us detached from Maya. If we're discontent, then we can start to try and go out in the world to become content. So if we're content, then we don't do that. Karmas can be harnessed through regular forms of disciplinary practices of body, mind, and emotions. And the understanding of the law of karma itself as a force that is sent out through thought, feeling, and action, and most often returns to us through other people's thought, feeling, and action. But it is the anava mala, the mala of personal ego, that is the binding chain which cannot be so easily dealt with. It is the last to go. It is only at the point of death, before the great Mahasamadhi of the greatest rishi, that the anava mala chain is finally broken. If we compare this anava mala, personal ego, to an actual mala, a string of rudraksha beads, the purpose on the path at this stage of mati, mati is the niyama in which this is being elucidated, is to begin eliminating the beads, making the chain shorter and shorter. So that's a way of lessening the ego sense. Visually, we see the beads on a mala, taking them off, so we have less beads through humble action. The mala should be getting shorter and shorter rather than our adding beads to it so that it gets longer and longer. A warning, if the anava mala, symbolically a garland of rudraksha beads, has 36 beads and it steadily grows to 1,008, because of practices and the adulation connected with them within the psychic realms of the pseudoscience of parapsychology, such as bending spoons, telepathy, channeling, and ectoplasmic manifestations, and we can say, and for monks, teaching, the 1,000 strand of rudraksha beads could become so heavy, so dangerous to the wearer, that eventually he would trip and fall on his nose. The wise say pride goes before a fall. And the still wiser know the spiritual pride is the most difficult to deal with, to eliminate, to rise above in a lifetime. The spiritually proud never open themselves to a satguru. The mystically humble do. Wonderful day.